This Labor Day weekend at the beach or maybe a barbecue, you could easily hear something like this.
It's so hot out, I could literally die.
Or,
that is literally the cutest dog ever.
Okay, no one was actually dying, and that surely wasn't really the cutest dog ever. Though our next guest argues that the meaning of that word literally, along with many others, is evolving. And that's okay with him. John McWhorter is a popular linguist and professor at Columbia University. His new book is called Words on the Move, Why English Won't and Can't Sit Still Literally. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me, Renee.
Let's start with one of the words in that subtitle of your book, literally. Can you give us a thumbnail of how its usage came to change dramatically over the centuries?
Well, originally, literally meant by the letter. And we kind of like the idea that that's what it would always be used to mean. But over time, instead of meaning by the letter, what people really just meant was really. And so now, literally doesn't have that by the letter meaning. It's something that people use to figuratively reinforce. So that means that we have this word that you can say means both one thing and then its opposite. And that seems to really get up people's nose. And I can understand how that can seem frustrating because it seems unusual. But the thing is, it isn't. It's something called a contronym. And so, for example, you can seed a watermelon, and everybody knows that that does not mean that you are laboriously putting the seeds into it. You're taking them out. But then you can seed something by putting a seed in the ground and watching something green come up. Contronyms, let's face it, are neat. We should rejoice that our language has interesting little wrinkles as long as they don't interfere with comprehension.
But the interesting part of many of these words, and this one in particular, is that they go back, some of them, so far. This use of literally, you write, goes back to a 1769 novel, The History of Emily Montagu. And I really must read the quote. "He is a fortunate man to be introduced to such a party of fine women at his arrival. It is literally to feed among the lilies." I mean, it's
yeah.
Perfect. It's 1769.
It is. And he's not going to consume them. And yet we read that and we think, oh, how fancy, how fine. But then if we see somebody chewing gum and walking down the street today and using it in the same way, we think, goodness gracious, youth today, everybody's dumb. There's an inconsistency there. And it's based on a very understandable sense that language is supposed to stay the same, except there'll be new words for new things. You have to call a fax machine something. And then maybe some words will come in from other languages, such as sushi, and then there'll be slang. But it's less obvious that the very meanings of words and how we put them together are always ooching along such that the language we speak now is on its way to becoming another language.
What would be one of your examples of a word that morphed over the years to something quite different?
This is one of the best ones. Silly. Silly starts out meaning blessed. But all of these implications happen to the word over time. If you're blessed, then one could assume that you're probably innocent. So it starts to mean innocent. But if you're innocent, then you could be seen as possibly a little naive, as kind of weak. Well, if you're kind of weak, and there comes a point when that's the main meaning of it, it could be that you have a weak mind. If you're weak-minded, then you might be a bit of a boob. And so next thing you know, silly has come from meaning something where you have an amen chord to being soupy sails.
You also cite the word adorable. At one point in the book, you say, what would you think if I said, I find the movies Citizen Kane and Taxi Driver adorable?
That's
and of course,
right.
We'd all say, really?
That makes no sense. And yet adore is a term that we could use. Oh, I adore Citizen Kane. But never would you say, what an adorable movie. Because adorable connotes something probably small or something dear in a way that you feel from above. That's the way adorable happens to have drifted. It's a lot of why Shakespearean language can be so difficult to understand when delivered live. Because a lot of those words are words we're completely familiar with, but it doesn't seem to quite make sense often because they're using the words at a different stage of the ooching than they happen to be in our time.
Right. It's not just words that we might not recognize because they've gone out of style altogether. They've
right.
been it's lost altogether. It's words we see and know the word, mm-hmm. but don't understand because it doesn't seem to mean the right thing.
Yeah. Somebody will say wit, and it means knowledge. It doesn't mean Noel Coward and champagne. And so we're hearing it differently. Or somebody will say generous, and you're thinking, well, what does magnanimity have to do with what this person is saying? There's a speech that Edmund does in King Lear that I'm thinking of with this. And really, it's not that he's saying that he's generous. It's he's saying that he's noble. That's what the word originally meant. Now, if you're a noble, one aspect of it might be that you are generous with your goods, that you give things to the public. After a while, generous came to mean magnanimous, and we use noble to mean what Shakespeare could use generous to mean. If we could go back to Elizabethan streets, we would be able to get around, but we'd have a headache. People would have a hard time completely getting us, and we would have a hard time completely getting them.
Well, you are very generous, I might say, about the use of language. But surely there are words that even irritate you.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh. Definitely. I'm very generous about it because I know that there's no scientific reason to despise how somebody is saying something. And I've got one, actually, that comes to mind most often that I'm sure makes me sound like quite the pill. I don't like it when people say in stores, can I get a Coke? Can I get a ham sandwich? I'm always saying, no, you cannot get it. There's just something that strikes me as a little short, slightly vulgar about that way of putting it. So yeah, I'm human. I get it. You cannot like the way people are saying things and yet understand that what they're saying isn't wrong. That's a kind of a karate kiddish maneuver that I think linguists end up putting themselves through. And I think that a lot of other people could do it too, and we'd feel better about what we hear around us.
John McWhorter, it has been quite literally a pleasure to speak with you.
Renee, thank you for having me on about this. I appreciate it.
And John McWhorter's new book is called Words on the Move.